Bonjour tout le monde et bienvenue à Petite Planète Bleue. Or, hello and welcome to Small Blue Planet. This is the podcast which takes you around the world and visits different countries, looking at their science fiction and fantasy communities, and hopefully spreading a bit of international love. As you might have guessed from somebody who was completely hopeless at languages at school and was told by her teachers to go and do science instead, I am crap at languages and slightly less than crap at French. But today we will have a couple of people who are very good at French. Before I introduce them, however, one quick apology. Our producer, Karen Burnham, is not with us today. Karen's mom is in hospital, and there's a small and hopefully routine operation being performed about now. And Karen is off there looking after mother, so we wish her all the best, and hopefully there'll be good news about that afterwards. Anyway, on with the show, and as I said, we are looking at France today. We have two fabulous French authors with us. First of all, I'd like to introduce Melanie Fazzi. Melanie, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Would you like to tell people a little bit about yourself?
About myself, I'm mostly a short story writer, I'd say. I published four books so far. There are two novels and two short story collections. And I'm also a translator from English to French.
Okay, marvelous. And with Melanie, we have Lionel Davoust. Bonjour, Lionel.
Bonjour.
And can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, well, I'm currently writing and more in the fantasy and thriller genre and trying to cross over and mix up both genres. I'm writing both novels and short stories, but I've also taken some editorial roles since I directed the fantasy fantasy magazine in the beginning of the 2000s, and sometimes editing anthologies, and I'm also a translator like Melanie.
Alrighty, it seems an awful lot of people that I talk to are translators, but that's a good thing because we need lots of them. What we typically do on this show is to start off talking about the community in your country, so things like conventions, magazines, and so on. And I guess the French convention that most people outside of France will have heard of is Utopiale, which takes place in Nantes in October. That's a pretty large commercial event, as far as I'm aware. I guess from an Anglophone point of view, it's more like DragonCon than anything else, so I don't know if you guys would recognize that comparison. Have either of you been there?
No, unfortunately not, but I did heard of it.
Melanie?
You're talking about DragonCon, or
No,
have you
no.
been there?
Well, Utopia.
Oh, we've been there quite often, actually, yes.
Oh, yeah, I thought you talked about DragonCon, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Right. Okay, so tell us about Utopia then.
Well, it is a pretty big event. I'd say it's probably the biggest event we have in France. Although I don't know if I'd call it a convention, because I always understand the word convention as being run by fans mostly, which is not the case here. And also, it doesn't just focus on books as other conventions will do. It's also very, pretty famous for being about films and games and video games and many things, not just specifically a literary convention.
That's why I described it as being like Dragon Con. That's,
Oh, so that, okay.
Yeah, I think that, Melanie, you do raise a good point. Well, obviously, I'm seeing things from a French point of view, so I'm not aware if that really is the case. This situation we have here is the case elsewhere. Cheryl, you will know that better than I do, but it seems that in France we have, I think, quite a unique situation in the way that the literary events we have around science fiction and fantasy are usually not that much run by fans. That is, in the strict convention point of view. They are usually we don't call them conventions. We call them festivals. They have been actively supported by a city and by the public funds. And you have an intermingling of people in the publishing world and fans, of course, writers and publishers and the local authorities collaborating to build these events. We do have a national convention of science fiction and a national convention of fantasy in France. But actually, the biggest events, like you said, Cheryl, like the Utopial or the Imaginals in Epinal, which are the two main events, I think. We see the fandom a lot. We see, of course, the writers. But they are not, per se, strictly a fandom event.
You mentioned Imaginal in Epinal, and that's the one French festival that I have been to, and I heartily recommend it to everybody. Epinal itself is a lovely little town and should be a lot more famous in our community than it is, because it has a claim to being the birthplace of comics. There's a wonderful museum there with lithograph plates dating back well into the 19th century, possibly even 18th century, I can't remember offhand. But it has in May this wonderful fantasy convention, which takes place in a park on the banks of the Moselle, and the weather is lovely, the food is lovely, the people are lovely, and I really enjoyed it. Well, so thank you for helping me around there, Leonella.
It was really my pleasure. Yeah, Epinal is really a very nice place. It's interesting to see that Epinal is so, as you said, it has a long history of prints, and so Imaginals are and Utopials are the two, I think, main events, the two biggest events at least that are taking place in France around science fiction and fantasy. Epinal is more geared toward fantasy and historical novel, and is actively connecting fantasy to the historical context, and actively saying to the public who don't know about fantasy that fantasy comes from a long tradition of history, which is quite appealing to, I think, the French audience. Utopial is more geared towards science fiction. Of course, you have fantasy in Utopial and science fiction in Epinal. But so we have, and these are the two main events, I think, we have.
We should probably briefly mention that supposed Paris Worldcon bid that people noticed on the internet a few weeks back. I gather that's now dead. Is that the case?
Well, it's a bit strange, actually. I've not heard a lot about it. And from the fandom, that what I saw is I didn't hear a lot of news about it. So I don't really know much. Last time I went to the website, it was dead. So I don't really know that much about it. I dig a little around, and I didn't see anyone coming forward talking about it, but I might totally be mistaken. So, but didn't hear a lot about it, actually. But I think, well, it would be great to have a Worldcon in Paris or maybe Lyon. I've heard when the Worldcon was happening in Montreal and the French community went there, we went back, everybody was really excited and trying to see how that could be possible, but that's obviously a long-term project.
Well, you know, Montreal is bidding again, I think, for 2017, so perhaps we will have another Francophone Worldcon then.
It would be great.
Yeah, so let's move on a bit to magazines. The French magazine I think that most people know is Galaxies, edited by Pierre Gevard. Probably the best one known in France as well, or are there others that we should be aware of?
We have, Melanie, if you want to take over.
No, I have several other magazines in mind as well. As you said, there's Galaxy, which is mostly a science fiction, strictly science fiction magazine. There's a different one called Bifrost, which I'd say is slightly different in the sense of not just focusing on science fiction as a mixture of genres. I don't know if Lionel wants to add something about these. I have a few others in mind.
We could also mention Fiction, which is the French edition of FNSF, but also publishing writers from other countries, obviously France, but also from other horizons. And Galaxy, Bifrost, and Fiction are the three main magazines. But I think it could be interesting to mention that there are many budding initiatives. We could quote Angle Mort, which would translate as, I don't know, Dead Angle or something like that, which is strictly online. And it's existed for a few years, I think, now.
Maybe 2 years, I think.
Two or three years. Yeah, It's quite unique in the landscape, as it's been from the start strictly an online magazine, which with a professional professional goal, and as we know in the online world, things move extremely fast, and in the ebook publishing also, and it's in a very short time, it's managed to really, it's really an important magazine now, and it's all the stories can be read for free. So it's quite an interesting initiative with very strong literary qualities, and it tackles all areas of SF and fantasy. Mm. It publishes science fiction, weird also. So it's really interesting to follow.
Well, I was going to mention exactly the same. So
yeah,
they're mostly the ones I'd strongly recommend.
What about podcasts? When I was in Epinal, I met Lucas Moreno, who does Utopod. Is that still going?
I don't think it is at the moment. I think it stopped maybe a few years ago.
Yeah, it's not anymore. Yeah, it stopped. There are podcasts, but they are mostly being run by information website, as far as I know. We have a few strong. I think actually, when it comes around to news, correct me if I'm wrong, Melanie. But when it comes to, you know, news about the journal and publishing and interviews and reviews, we have the historical magazines that we talked about. But now a lot of things are being structured around the websites. Mm. So we have big websites which are hubs of information. And many, several of them publish their own podcasts. We have small websites also, but they are all run around roughly the same model. That is, they are hubs of information. They provide interviews and reviews and news about the field in general. And they branch out towards their own forums and building their own community and providing their own podcasts and such. And there's also the phenomenon of blog that's blogging, which is very active and going strong in France, that maybe might be worth a word too.
Yeah, Noosphere, I think, is the one that I tend to go to when I'm looking for French news.
It's very
Noosphere is... Sorry, Mary, go ahead.
I was going to say it's very handy. It's a very handy website, but not specifically for news. It's more like an archive of sorts. If you look for a writer, you can have the full list, the full... all the books published by this writer, the translated titles, and so on. We don't necessarily rely on Noosphere for news, which, as we said, we'd look on other websites. But it's very handy for everything else.
Yeah, Noosphere works more like an online encyclopedia. And, now it's fairly common. I think you could compare it to ASFDB, I think, something like that, in the English-speaking world. Noosphere is a very old project. And, so now it's quite current to have, you know, an encyclopedia of publications online. But it's a very old project, I think, going back maybe over 10 years, which in the online world is
forever.
Yeah, it's a century old, literally. So its goal is more to catalog and all that has been published ever in French language or translation.
And also a lot of reviews online.
Yeah, a lot of reviews and a lot of in-depth articles. For websites for news, I think we could talk about ActuSF, which is was originally more about science fiction, but is now all about the genre. Elbakin, which is focused more about fantasy. Mythologica, which is all about the place. These are the main ones, I think. I wouldn't want to forget anyone. Help me, Melanie, on this one. Maybe I don't want to forget.
I think we have the main ones covered.
Yeah.
Well, I'll circulate some notes after the podcast, and we can always add things in, and you can correct my French spelling.
it's perfect, really. It's very good.
Yeah. One of the reasons that I used to use Noosphere was because they were generally quite good with news about French awards, which, of course, if you're an encyclopedia type thing, that's the sort of thing you would do. And that reminds me that you do have awards. And I remember seeing them given out in Epinal. Lionel, you won this award. I have these Chrome Rocket things, but you have an award which is a foot high blue Marquis de Carabas.
Yes, exactly. A Puss in Boots, and I'm very proud of this one. It's very cute and very classy at the same time.
It's one of the best award trophies I've ever seen.
Well, I had the pleasure to win it in 2009 for a short story. It was the Imaginals Award, which is one of the big awards in France, and it's geared towards fantasy. It grew up over the years. It's about 10 years old. No, a bit older. It's as old as the festival itself, so it must be 11 or 12 years. It has all the categories you can expect from novel, foreign novel, short story, and it grew up over the years. It's interesting to see that more categories were added. I think we could mention also the Grand Prix d'Imaginaire, which would be the science fiction and fantasy Grandmaster Awards, should I translate it like that, which is, the biggest and the oldest, or at least one of the oldest awards in France. I don't know how long it's been going, but
I think it's been going since the 70s, I think.
Yeah, it's huge now. It has lots and lots of categories, and it's very, very respected. These are the big ones. We could also mention there are awards tied to the events. There's Utopias have their awards. They are also, I think it's interesting to note that there's a European dimension in this award. The idea is you have a few initiatives structures around the awards like this one, which the goal is to open an exchange about science fiction and fantasy in a European context. I think it's quite interesting to note.
Yeah, that's definitely good. Obviously, there are other countries in Europe where people speak French, so that's a good start. But does it go beyond French language at all?
If you want
to... Oh, no, go on.
I think what I was thinking, I was thinking a little, I've been listening to the episodes of Small Planets beforehand, before we recorded this one, and I was thinking, it's always a bit, awkward for a French person to talk about French science fiction and such, because... we are not the only French-speaking country, obviously, and we have excellent writers in Switzerland, in Belgium, and in all manners of Spanish-speaking country, which is called the Francophone world. And usually they're being assimilated to France, but I think that's not fair for these guys. So there's the French-speaking sphere of science fiction and fantasy goes beyond France. And I think that it's fair to say it, and many, for instance, comic book writers, graphic novels. I think everybody knows about Tintin, for instance. He's not French, he's Belgian. So I think it's important to put that into context, to say that French SFNF, French language at least, French speaking SFNF is not necessarily French in origin, and I think it's important to say that.
Yeah, if you think you've got problems, sooner or later I will have to do Spain. And the Spanish-speaking world is vast.
We'll
be doing the Philippines shortly, though I think only the English-speaking portion of the Philippines. And we'll probably have to do a second one for the Spanish-speaking portion. But moving on a little bit, we have some specialist SFNF publishers in France. Again, the people that listeners in the US and UK will know are Bragelonne, Stéphane Marsan's company, because they travel quite a lot. Are there other companies that we should know about?
There are quite a few, actually. It's really hard to pinpoint just a few because, Bragelonne is probably one of the most successful, I'd say, in terms of, they publish a huge number of books every year. and they have quite a few best-selling writers as well. I don't know if you want to, Lionel, if you want to name a few specifically.
Well,
I have quite a few in mind, actually.
Oh, I think we could mention La Talente, which is who are the French publishers of Terry Pratchett, for instance. We have a few other houses, the Nemos Publishing, for instance, which is quite old too, and which was really, really prominent in building the so-called, well, I'm saying so-called because these expressions are always a bit awkward to use, but the so-called French school of fantasy. Stéphane Marsan was behind that, actually. Nemos did a lot of work to put forward and promote and publish and do a lot of work around the French fantasy 10 to 15 years ago, when the genre was not that widely known in France, and it was even less known that French people could actually write it. So they did a lot of work around that. We have lots of also smaller publishing houses, but who are extremely active and doing an incredible work. We could mention, I think, the Mouton Électrique, Electric Sheep, in reference to Philip K. Dick, who are doing a really interesting and an important job of republishing all the writers from the French Golden Age, which were quite forgotten, but are also doing lots of work and publishing lots of essays, very good quality essays about the history of the genre, the history of SF and fantasy in France, but also in the world. And they're also covering, because we have a strong French tradition of serials with Arsène Lupin and all these popular serials, and they are tying all the popular literature to this tradition too. And it's interesting to they are doing lots of interesting work about that. Once again, I wouldn't want to forget anyone, but if you see anyone.
This one I thought would be worth mentioning is a smaller publisher that's called La Volte. And it's mostly they have quite a few really good writers, and mostly I'd say they would go for more experimental science fiction in a way. Well, it's a big word when we say experimental, but I'd say they're very interesting in very literary or very... very original and unusual kinds of literature.
I think it would be interesting also to mention that many great historical publishing houses have their own imprints of science fiction and fantasy, which are quite historical and going back a long way from long tradition. They somehow changed over the years. But we could mention De Noël, Lune d'Encre, for instance, and J'ai lu, who was there, they have their trade paperback collection now. I think it would be interesting to mention them. Interesting to say, I think in the landscape, and forgive me if I'm a bit confused, because that's it just occurred to me right now, actually. Interesting to note that you have the independent specialized publishers like Bragelonne, for instance, who are going very strong, but also all the historical publishers that tradition of, you know, Saint-Germain-des-Prés and such, the somehow romanticized view of the publishing world that stems from this era. They do have their own imprints also in science fiction and fantasy, and it's very interesting. I think that's cool to see that there's also a tradition, a small tradition, but it's being maintained, of publishing also general literature in those big houses.
Yeah, it occurs to me that French literature has certainly flirted with our sort of story for quite a long time. I mean, you think about Alexandre Dumas, for example. You see the way that the Musketeers stories are being adapted into steampunkish movies, and you realize that these really are very much genre type fiction. For the 2005 Worldcon in Glasgow, Kim Newman and Paul McCauley did this wonderful skit where they pretended that the Hugo Awards were named after Victor Hugo. And again, I can quite see that. You know, if you look at some of the stuff that he did, particularly the Hunchback of Notre Dame, you think this is somebody who is of the same sort of writer that we are. And of course, then we have Jules Verne, who in many ways could be regarded as the founder of modern science fiction. Well, you have people like Mary Shelley who wrote SF before then. Verne is somebody who had a project of going out and writing stories about science to educate people about science in very much the same way that Hugo Gernsback tried to do with his magazine in America. So I think you have a great tradition there, and it's something that France should be very proud of.
I think we all read Jules Verne from we grow up with Jules Verne stories, so I think we're really immersed in that background indeed. Yes, I think it's interesting to see that there's a tendency in French literature also to go back to that background, to that inheritance, and play with it. And it's been done for years, and it's always new, and it's always a tribute, but it's always very funny. And there are lots of parallel histories are going quite strong in France, because there's all this historical background and material that many writers keep going to, and they are digging out always new gems. And there's really a fondness, I think, for the tradition of the serial I was mentioning earlier. You were talking exactly about Dumas, but all this tradition of the popular serial is, I think, many French writers do have a fondness for that and this historical background, and they are often going back to that and proposing new stories and new slants about it, and it's really good fun.
The nice people at Wesleyan University Press, who publish quite a lot of translated classic works, have done a couple of books of French literature. I've checked out the ones that I've got. Joseph-Henri Rosnier is apparently Belgian, so we should wave politely to him and then leave him perhaps for some time where we can get some Belgian writers on the show. But I am very partial to Albert Robida. I've got a copy of his novel The 20th Century, which is really very, very funny. Apparently he was the editor of a satirical magazine, a sort of French equivalent to Punch. And he had a lot of fun with that book, making fun of the way that society was going and being remarkably prescient along the way.
I think it's a pity that I will straightforwardly admit that I'm not that much knowledgeable about this the what I think could be said the golden age of golden age with the classics in English science fiction, English speaking science fiction. We do have the same in France, but I think I am a very sad tribute to my generation that these are the writers that when you grow up, you don't really hear about that much. And I have to confess, being a sad example of my a bit lack of knowledge about that. But that's definitely something that I want to know more about. But and that's why also what I was mentioning, the works of the Mouton Électrique earlier, because they're doing lots of work of trying to get that literature and get it known to current readers, because it's being quite forgotten, and I'm aware there's a whole wealth of wonderful things that. But I think we are a bit the readership at large is a bit cut off from that route. So I don't know if you agree, Melanie, but.
Well, I'd say that's one thing I find interesting is that many of us grew up reading science fiction, and sometimes considering that science fiction was something that was basically written in English, and sometimes not even realizing that there were so many French writers that we could read as well. And indeed, many people wouldn't necessarily think of Verne or Hugo when you speak of science fiction, which is a pity really. But many of us grew up with this idea, and I can see it changing. But it's still very much something that young generations tend to think about. Is sometimes they're surprised to know that there are current writers who are writing science fiction or fantasy in France, because to them it's mostly written in English.
Well, I can certainly recommend the Robidoux if you want to look it up. He did things like he predicted the advent of television, complete with product placement ads. So all the programs had little outtakes where they explained the branded merchandise that they were using in the dramas. He had Italy turned into a giant theme park, and apparently they'd sent French chefs there to teach the Italians to cook properly, which I don't suppose will go down very well in Italy, but there you go. And Britain apparently had been conquered by Mormon missionaries and was now a fundamentalist Mormon state. I enjoyed that a lot. So, anyway, moving on, we should definitely make mention of a wonderful publishing company called Black Coat, who publish an enormous number of French books in translation, almost all of them translated by the very, very busy Brian Stableford. A lot of what they're producing here, I believe, is out of copyright work. It's stuff that came out in France in the 20s and 30s and so on, and it perhaps could be described as French pulp literature. Is that fair?
I think so. Yes, I was. It's actually quite impressive to see the scale of the catalogue. They have literally dozens of pulp writers translated. And as you mentioned, mostly by Brian Stableford. They do have a few recent writers, but really not that many. I don't know if you want to add.
Add
something.
Totally agree.
Yeah, so it's a marvelous source of French books, and we'll come back to the more modern writers that they have later. But just moving forward in time, Melanie was talking about growing up and reading science fiction, which of course I did, but some of the science fiction that I read was in Metal Hurlant. I was very fond of Meebus and Philippe Douillet. So was that something that either of you were familiar with as you were growing up?
Not necessarily the magazine Metal Hurlant itself, which I must say, sadly, I never read. But I think all of us who grew up reading science fiction read some of the, like you say, Meebus or Kaza or some of the people who were in it. I think it's one of the major influences. But basically, I don't know anyone who didn't read like Lincal, for example, as a teenager.
Yes, definitely. Moebius was an absolute giant and working in so many fields, by the way. He was doing science fiction, but also other kinds of graphic novels under his other names and his real name. Yes, it's an absolute classic. And I think it contributed to found a generation of artists and writers who grew up on these very strong images and strong scenarios. Its imagery is extremely vivid, and it has very weird but strong imagery, very strong themes. It's very baroque. Not know if that's a word in English.
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, it's very baroque in appearance, and I think I think to all of us to some extent, I've grown up on those images and these daring mixes of imagery and themes, and I think it really was an eye opener and a broadening of horizons for many teenagers who grew up on that.
I was going to add about Moebius that he was involved in a cartoon called Time Masters in the 80s, I think, and I'm not sure. I think it was not as popular as his comics, but many of us saw that as kids, as really young kids. I was 7 maybe when I saw it, and the first time I was introduced to Time Paradox was in that. And it's really striking when you're exposed to that as a kid. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I'm afraid not.
We should mention in passing, of course, that comics, or bande dessinée, as they're known in France, are absolutely huge. And the big convention, I think, is Angoulême, which, as far as I understand, is bigger than San Diego.
I've never been there, so I can't talk about it firsthand, but it's absolutely huge.
Yeah, I wouldn't know in terms of size, but yes, it is indeed huge. And the comic and graphic novel market in France is indeed absolutely huge. You have many, many new series going out, and these series are doing a lot to simply show science fiction and fantasy to new audiences. It's really huge markets, and I think it's interesting to note, in a way. I don't know if you will agree with that, Melanie, but it's a bit different from the purely literary world. These science fiction and fantasy worlds, well, it's the genre literature are always a bit difficult, you know, to promote to mainstream readers. And I think it's a lot easier to have mainstream readers go to a genre inside the comic book, the bande dessinée, and the graphic novel industry than it is in the literary world.
Yeah, it's quite sad actually, but it seems that mainstream readers are more ready to experiment science fiction when there are images instead of just words, and it works as well with films and TV shows, and it seems much easier.
That's exactly the same in the English-speaking world as well.
I think it could be, in passing, interesting to mention that there seems to be a discussion going on about the image of literature in France, which it's quite interesting when you actually compare the covers of books in English and books in translation that are being published in mainstream publishers. In the English-speaking world, you have images like you have on science fiction and fantasy imprints. When you translate that and publish that in French mainstream imprints, you have a blank cover, because a book is supposed to be a serious item. And we do have a beautiful cover art in science fiction and fantasy genres and in those imprints, but that's actually rather rare. That's more the exception than the norm. If you take the world of French publishing at large, we do seem to have a relation to literature that, in a way, literature is supposed to be a serious affair, you know. We do keep that reference with I for one would like to see it seen more as, you know, good fun, whatever the genre.
Well, let's talk about some of the modern writers now, and I've kept you folks talking about other people for quite a while, so perhaps you'd like to talk about your own work for a little bit. Melanie, would you like to start?
To talk about my own work.
Particularly anything that's available in English.
So far, I only have a few stories available in English, because it's always the problem that you have to translate stories before you submit them, and so it's a lot of work, and it's much easier with stories. I have a few short stories that were published in the magazine of fantasy and science fiction. What was that? Black Static, a few others, and they usually. I don't know, because we don't have the same genres definitions. I don't know if I'd classify them as horror or fantasy or something in between. But they're mostly stories taking place in ordinary places with ordinary people, and something just slightly off, slightly wrong starts happening. Basically that kind of story, with a very strong focus on places and atmospheres and people, I'd say.
The one story of yours that I've read is the one in the Apex Book of World Science Fiction, edited by Lavi Tidhar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one where there's the couple whose twin children have disappeared.
Oh, yes.
And it's told from the point of view of the mother, who keeps complaining that her husband isn't coping with it well, mm-hmm. that he's taking a drink and whatever. And as the story goes on, we discover that she's... of the opinion that the children were kidnapped by a tree spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was wonderfully spooky. I like that.
Well, what I really like to do with my writing is start with a normal situation and just I start hinting at some point that something is slightly wrong. And as I said, the reader, I wanted the reader in this particular story to think she was talking to maybe a man, somebody who abducted the kids. And it's gradually you start to realize that, no, something is wrong. She wouldn't be talking to a person the way she is. And I wanted it to be a kind of surprise and to maybe to make the reader a bit uneasy.
It certainly worked, I think.
Well, I'm glad it did.
Elena, what about your work?
I have to say that my first contact with the science fiction and fantasy was stemming actually from the surrealists and magical realism, and that's how I came to discover the genre. So I keep to remain in a little bit in faithful to these roots. I like to push the boundaries of reality in a way and try to. So, well, I'm partial to urban fantasy for that reason. So I usually go into that direction. I like to build worlds which have an internal reality, but more that can be considered as a kind of science. I just completed a series of they were marketed as thrillers, and they are thrillers because they are set in today with you have a secret society conspiracy kind of plot going on and a man alone against those guys. But where I had much fun with that is that the bad guys are actually mages. True mages in the actually practicing magic. So I had lots of fun incorporating more and more elements of magic as the story was going on. And so as it started as a thriller, and it's completely urban fantasy. So yeah, I like to stay on the line between what's real and what's not real, or what is presented as real, but it's obviously magic.
Mm. From the stuff of yours that I've read, I particularly like the idea of the memory soldiers.
Oh, thanks. Yes, I have two main worlds that I'm working on. That the first one I've just talked about, and the other one is set in this story you were talking about is relative to that other world, which is a fantasy world, and I play with the idea of, if I should talk about it very shortly, what if you had a kind of a Roman Empire which would have discovered the nuclear energy? So this world is about, in this period, we have this big empire which has very modern ideas about conquest, but it remains an empire, so indeed it does conquer people. And it's a kind of a sandbox for me, because I like to put all the icons of the genres that I grew up with and that I find cool. I have like giant robots, I have dragons, I have all the things I like about the genre, and I'm having good fun about that. But then I'm try also to tackle the themes that are nagging me concerning history. That is, how in history can you turn out to be a complete monster with the best of intentions and the best of interests at heart, which is something that I think is very frightening to me when I look at the course of history. So, that's maybe building this world for me is a way to alleviate those fears and trying to understand what the world is about, really.
And the memory soldiers, as I understand them, they're men who are able to draw strength in battle by discarding memories of their lives. Is that right?
Yes. This story was about that. So this story is about a people which has been fighting the Empire. I've been mentioning for many months now, and they're fighting a losing battle because, they have they're facing machines and they only are foot soldiers. But they do have this strength that they can discard a memory, all the emotional charge of a memory, remaining, leaving only the husk and an emotional scar that they can never really pinpoint, which is a kind of spleen, actually. And they fight on and on. And so the perverse thing about this way of fighting is that to be good soldiers, they have to live more and more and build more and more memories so that they can shed them later. And they reach a point where they just can't go on. And so that's the story of this of the last battle of these people against this empire, and how this culture will manage to leave, ironically, a lasting memory on the empire, even though they are fighting this losing battle and they are burning their own memories to fight.
Okay. Just moving on then to other French writers who are available in translation. The most recent example I think we've had is Pierre Pavel, whose Dragons and Musketeers novels have been made available by Glance in the UK. Is Pavel well known in France?
Well, it's actually
Go ahead, please.
I think it's actually quite popular. I don't know, maybe not you know, the most popular book, but this is actually quite popular, yeah. It's we were talking. It's a good example of what we were talking about earlier about the you were mentioning Dumas and other Golden Age writers, who have been an influence on some recent writers, and this is a good example of it, because you have this historical setting, which is basically the Three Musketeers kind of setting, and you also have dragons in human shape, so it's a good mixture of that.
Yeah, I was impressed with the idea.
Yeah, Pierre has a lot of wonderful novels. I hope they see translation because he's a great storyteller, but and he also plays very well with many different historical contexts. And let's hope he see more translations.
A very fine writer that I met when I went to Epinal is Jean-Claude Dugnac, who I think is mainly a short story writer. Is that correct?
He did publish a few novels, but he's mostly a short story writer, yes. Especially now, I'd say.
Yeah, yes. He's really, really renowned as a short story writer. He does have a few novels out. He's one of those writers which are just amazing, because he can just write just about anything and be good at it, which is just incredible. He writes wonderfully detailed, poetic, almost symbolic short stories, which are very intensely stylistic, and it's very beautiful. But he can also, you know, make you laugh out loud with just incredible, crazy ideas that he has. So he's a hugely talented and very, very diverse writer, and he's I think he's a good representative of what happens in the French short story in a French science fiction short story currently, I think. But he's been writing for many, many years, but he's been translated quite often.
Yeah, there's a collection called The Thieves of Silence, which is available from Black Coat. So I picked that one up and have been enjoying the stories in it. Who else have we got? Oh, one of the first winners of the Translation Awards was Georges-Olivier Chateauneuf. What can you tell me about him?
Well, I only just found out that he was translated, actually. I didn't know about that. He's not specifically considered a genre writer, I'd say. He was... I know him mostly as a part of a group of writers who call themselves Nouvelle Fiction, which means new fiction. And basically their motto was that they were not mainstream writers, they were not genre writers, but they were somewhere in between.
And
something you could compare to magic realism, I'd say, more than actual fantasy.
Yeah, their motto is that they really work on the suspension of disbelief, which is something we really well know, of course, in science fiction and fantasy. So, they really have an approach to literature which is really relevant to the genre. Although I wouldn't think he would be really recognized as a genre writer in France, but he does have an approach that is totally akin to that of science fiction and fantasy, because the discourse of Nouvelle Fiction is to say that the suspension of disbelief must not go into the way of the story. If you have supernatural elements of symbolic elements, well, it's not a problem. They're just there to reinforce the discourse of the story.
I suspect that some of the other writers translated by Edouard Gauvin, who did the translation of Chatorena's book, are also in the same group, because the translations all seem to be published in American serious literary magazines. So that's...
Chatorena is definitely considered, well, for the wider audience, he would be considered a writer of what we call littérature blanche, which is white literature, which is, roughly speaking, all that is not genre in France.
Alrighty. Now, somebody who is entirely different, also a French writer whose work I've read, is Maurice Bontek. I believe he's had an argument with France and run off to Canada now, but he is French by birth. Is that correct?
He is, yes, and I think it would be safe to say that Maurice Dantec has had a lot of arguments with a lot of people.
Basically.
he does seem to be that sort of fellow.
He is, yes. He's very vocal about many political issues, and he's a very vocal guy. He has very strong ideas on many issues that I don't necessarily agree with, but whatever. He's a writer of science fiction, short anticipation, and a thriller. He's most interested in techno thriller and its links to science fiction, and he goes on to link the mysticism and science, and so he is trying to blend all those issues and seeing how technology and science can turn mystic and how these interact. He's very interesting. He's an interesting writer. He's been hugely successful in France. But since he ran off to Canada, he's a bit of a controversial character. He's quite a character, actually. Mm. So he's an interesting writer, but among the years, his opinions and his ideas made him a bit. It hurt his popularity, I think, a little. And but he's a definitely a character, and he's very interesting. I think his first books are more interesting, because as time goes on, I think he's less accessible. So I think it would be better to start off with his first books and then go from there.
I'd say the first three books probably, and I understood that the one that was translated is Babylon Babies.
That's correct. Yes.
It's his third book, and probably, well, it's supposed to be one of his best. And I heard that it's just before his book started becoming a little bit more obscure, if I can say that. But this particular one was really, really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So who else might we find in translation that I don't know about?
I'm wondering, do you have Welbeck in translation? Have you heard of him?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
I think he would be interesting to talk about a little. He is a lover of science fiction, and he's very interested by that. Although once again, he would not that considered be that much of a science fiction writer by a wide audience in France, but he is. And he's very interested in that. I think what's interesting, for example, he wrote an essay in France about Lovecraft. So that definitely goes a long way to say that the interest he has for general literature.
Well, I've read that. It's very interesting.
He won one of the most prestigious mainstream French award, which is the Goncourt Award, for La Carte et le Territoire, which is I don't know if it's translated, but in English that would be the map and the territory.
That's available.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we obviously see, of course, looming the shadow of the general semantics and such. So he's a very interesting writer. he's considered to be really at the vanguard of French literature. He's being, you know, controversial as well, but he's a best-selling writer, and what best-selling writer isn't a bit controversial at some point? What's interesting about him is that he talks, he really integrates, well, you can agree or not with his ideas, but I think what's unique about him is that he talks a lot about social and economic themes in his novels, and usually these fields you often see only in essays. But he manages to, at least in his first books, he manages to tackle these themes in fiction, and I think that's quite rare and quite interesting to note.
Like, what about people who haven't been translated yet? Who are the big names in France?
There are so many of them. It's really hard to choose. But I'd say we were talking about the awards a bit earlier, and I'd say something that would be a good barometer of that would be to see the Grand Prix de l'Imaginaire. Because if you look at the winners of mostly the best French novel, I'd say most of the time it's the novel that had the award was basically the one novel that everybody was talking about and that made a big impression at one particular time. So I'd say it would be a good idea to look at this. Like the last one, last year the prize was awarded to a book called Rêve de Gloire, which translates, I'm losing my words, it would translate as Dream of Glory, I think, by the late Roland C. Wagner, who died last year. And it's a Uchronia about the Algerian War. And I haven't read it myself, but it's supposed to be a very, very impressive book, for example.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wanted to mention Roland Wagner too. He has a very impressive, career. What's interesting to note is that he was, by conviction, he was non-violent, and you see, when science fiction and fantasy sometimes tends to resort to violence. There's a lot of humor and fondness, and his works are globally extremely positive, and I think that's very interesting. And in the world we live in, it's good to see to read positive books. It's not naive in any way, not really not. It's not naive. It does tackle very strong and sometimes difficult themes, but it's globally quite optimistic, and it's incredibly good fun. He also has a series that I hope gets translated one day, which is the Futur Mystère de Paris, which would be the Future Mysteries of Paris, which once again is a direct tribute to the serials, detective stories, and it's about a future where the psychosphere, as he calls it, which is the sphere of all the Jungian archetypes, came to life, and they are present in everyday Paris, and you follow the adventures and the investigations of detective. Private investigator who is blessed or cursed with the unique talent of invisibility. That is not really invisible. You see the guy, but he's so nondescript that you forget you ever see them as soon as you turn your eyes away. And he passes totally, nobody notices him. So he has to wear outrageous clothes. Like, he has a very famous green hat. and he wears a riot of colors just to be noticed by his clients when he just has to meet them, because he's being forgotten and not noticed by anyone, which is quite handy when you are an investigator, but he's quite a curse in his everyday life. So yeah, I think it would be great to have that translated. Melanie, you were talking about the awards. You can find many lists of the awards. We're talking about the Noosphere website. There's a section in research, and you see you have many awards have their website on that sub website of Noosphere, so you can see the lists there. I think I don't know, Melanie, if you have all the names. Well, there are one or two. Well, we can't go on a long litany of names, and I think that would be boring to some point. The two names I would like to mention are Pierre Bordage and Ayerdal. Pierre Bordage is, I think, one of the biggest names in France, biggest French names. He is mostly a science fiction writer, but he also wrote fantasy, parallel history. But he's, I think, he's most renowned for in science fiction, and he's a breathtaking, huge, ambitious science fiction writer. He writes space opera a lot, and he has lots of ambition in space operas. And his debut novel, which was Les Guerriers du Silence, The Warriors of Silence, which is a trilogy, is a huge intergalactical cycle, which tackles a lot of things. And I think it compares in breadth and its richness and its in depth of themes. To me, it's a personal favorite, and it totally compares to Frank Herbert's Dune. It has the same epicness and the same breadth. So I really hope this gets to be translated sometime, because it is as epic in scope. And the second name I would really like to mention is Ayerdal, who is also a science fiction writer, writing more now thrillers. But they remain thrillers with a science fiction slant, or they are short term anticipation going into the future. And what's remarkable about him, I think, is that he tackles a lot of political issues without ever being pompous or giving lectures. And it's always sometimes thrown when I hear there's a book with talking political issues, I'm always afraid that I'm going to have a lesson. He never does that, and he is I think he's a master in that regard, that he's a great storyteller, he has wonderful ideas, and he also manages to get the reader think and ask important and deep questions without ever preaching anything. And I think he has a depth of thinking that I think would be, well, I really hope he gets to see always a wider audience.
A while back you mentioned a French company that publishes Terry Pratchett, and presumably the other really top-selling English language writers like, you know, J.K. Rowling and George Martin and Neil Gaiman will get translated into French as well, but are there any writers that are particularly popular in translation in France that we might be surprised by?
I think most of the bestsellers are the same as at the moment are, you know, paranormal romance, Twilight, and so on. George Martin. I don't know if there's anything that would be surprising. I can't think of one right now.
I don't know if that's really relevant to the question, but that's something I wanted to mention at some point, that there's a strong about the translation in themselves. I think it's interesting to know, and that did a lot to promote the genres towards the French audience. There's been a tradition, actually, of having great names translating the English writers, and that did a lot to promote them. Well, no, I'll be talking about old classics, but for instance, Charles Baudelaire did translate Edgar Allan Poe, and that did a lot to introduce his work to France. And moving a bit closer to us, it's still a bit remote, but when science fiction and fantasy was, well, more science fiction actually in the 50s, 60s, when that was coming to the French audience, there were a little group of writers who, well, were just blown away by that literature, and they really wanted to introduce it to France. And they were big names, and I'm thinking most about Boris Vian, who is a huge writer and in France. He was in the surrealist. He was a surrealist and he translated Van Vogt's works, especially The World of Nonne, and he actively promoted science fiction, and that did a lot. He lended his name to this literature that wasn't really that popular at the time, and that did a lot. Sorry, I strayed a lot away from the from the original question, but I think to go back to translation, it's difficult, as Melanie said. I think it's difficult to pinpoint some names. I think we do have in France a big tradition of translating French stuff. We are. I think it would be not worth noting that Philip K. Dick is still going very, very strong in France. He always has been, and according to the, I don't know what's the real part of legend in that, or French pride, but according to the legend, Philip K. Dick was much more popular in France before he was in the U.S.
One thing I wanted to ask, one thing that's surprising about Philip K. Dick is that for some reason he's one of the few science fiction writers that many mainstream readers will read, even though they don't like science fiction. I don't know why that is. But many people, many people who claim they don't like science fiction will like Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, perhaps the he hooks into some French tradition of literature or whatever.
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, definitely. He has this he has this aura of respectability in a way. about the big names going, I think we could mention Robert Charles Wilson, which is really loved here. Brandon Sanderson is going very strong, I think. As I was saying, we are translating lots of stuff, and obviously we can translate everything, but we pretty much. I think our market, when it comes to translation, mirrors quite well that of the U.S., with, of course, a few years difference. But the big names in the U.S. are, I think, the big ones we have too here. All the great sensational and fantasy series are big sellers here too.
What about writers from other languages? I remember when I was in Epinal, there were a couple of German writers there. So you translate people like Andres Eschbach, for example?
Mm-hmm. His first novel was quite popular in France, actually, published by La Talente in 2000, maybe. I don't know if he's still as popular for his other books as for this particular one, but yeah.
Yes, yeah. Germany. I think there are strong ties with the Spanish-speaking world, whether from Spain, from Latin America, or from Cuba. One writer which is, I think, very popular in France is Yos, a Cuban writer of novel, short story, and he's really popular here. He has. But we are lucky to have a very active person who is very, very knowledgeable in about the Spanish-speaking world, which is Sylvie Miller, and she works a lot to look for Spanish-speaking novels and stories, and she does a lot to promote that, and we also have I don't know if he has had any books recently translated, but one writer who was very popular at a few years back was Juan Miguel Aguilera, who writes science fiction but also historical novels who with a twist which go towards the fantasy or more steampunk slants, and that's very popular in France. Usually things that tie with historical backgrounds are usually appealing to the French audience.
Of course, a French writer that everybody listening to this will be familiar with is Aliette de Bodard, but she writes in English, and I understand her works are now being translated into French by somebody else. Is she at all well known in France?
I'd say she was known outside of France, but long before she was in France, actually. She's just, as you said, she's just starting to being published. So she's not a very familiar name yet. Well, she's beginning to be, but might sound quite surprising, but she was popular outside of France much before she was over here.
Has anybody tried translating Harun Rahiniemi? Because there's a lot of influence of French punk in pulp, rather, in his Quantum Thief books.
I think it's being translated or about to be translated by Bragelonne, if I'm not mistaken. And there was a story, we were mentioning this digital magazine called Angle Mort, they had a story of his.
Excellent. Alrighty. I suppose we should think about wrapping up now as we've gone over the hour. But the other thing that we normally talk about on this podcast is language differences of how there are things that you can write in one language that you perhaps can't write in another. You two both do translations. Have you noticed anything about the differences between French and English?
Well, as a translator, you mostly notice the thing that you can't do in your own language that you can do in others. So it's like I'm always surprised by how you can have so many very brief words in English and you can say so many things in so few words, basically, which is something much harder to achieve in French. So as a translator, I'd say your point of view is a little bit twisted that way. I suppose we can do different things with the... I'd say genders, which is something you don't have in English. Like, I'm trying to remember in which book the female population was the majority and therefore the plural was feminine instead of being masculine, let's say.
Ah, right, yes, that's clever. Yeah. It makes an interesting contrast with the Finns, who don't have gendered pronouns at all, so you can do interesting things in Finnish in a different way.
But it's kind of tricky if you need to keep something ambiguous. I had to do that in translation a couple of times, and it's really tricky.
Yeah, I think what's one of my very own perception of the differences between English and French is that French seems to be much more needs to be much more precise in the use of vocabulary, because French, the French ears really don't bear repetition very well. Sometimes it can be quite a headache. You consider you have a repetition when you have twice the same word in the same page, basically, and that's sometimes that's very very tricky. So. The French language tends to be really, really precise in that regard, and leaves a lot of thinking to the reader. You were talking about the pronouns, Melanie, and that we don't have a neutral, so sometimes it's very tricky to translate some things. I think what's could be interesting to note just in passing is also it's quite difficult to build new words in French. We did have a tradition of doing that in the history of the language, but somehow it was lost, and now it just sounds funny. So we try to avoid doing that, and what we usually do, but that's also a strength in other regards. So as you said, Melanie, we can do things and others we can't. What we need to do when we build new words is go back to the Greek and Latin roots of the words, which strangely enough are quite transparent to French readers. One funny example, for instance, is that Dan Simmons' Hyperion, you have the Farcaster portals in French, that's portail, so portal, distance, which is Latin, basically. You have two Latin roots, and that's totally transparent to a French reader because that sounds like distance, and you have trans, which is the root for transportation, and dis, which is for distance. So you can play a lot on these roots, and that will be transparent to a French reader. But if you want to build new words, you will have to be very careful about how they sound, because you sometimes it's a bit awkward.
Now, that must be very difficult in science fiction, where building new words is something that people do all the time.
But it is quite a challenge, yeah.
It's quite a challenge for fantasy as well, because sometimes people will react, readers will react very strongly if you translate, like, say, in the Lord of the Rings, all the names, the places were translated, and some readers are beginning to think, no, you should leave them in English, we understand them, and they're completely missing the point. Sometimes they can get really critical that way if you translate the words, which is something I think you should do.
Yes. Okay, well, we've covered a fair amount of territory there, and as I say, we've gone over the hour now, so I should probably let you folks get on with your evenings. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you think we should definitely mention?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think I've been very talkative already.
Well, in that case, thank you very much, Melanie and Lionel, for being wonderful guests and introducing us to the world of French science fiction and fantasy. And I very much hope that I will get over to Epinal again sometime.
We sure hope to meet you again there. And thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.